Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you back again. Remember this week, we're looking back at last year and also looking forward to see what we think what might happen this year. But before we get stuck into that, let's have a quick chat to my two lovely co-hosts, Kate Bakos and Dave Johnston. Dave, how are you?
Very well, Pete. Looking forward to going through what we got right and the odd thing we got wrong with our predictions last year.
Some of them are remarkably wrong, but interestingly, I've had a look and, you know, a lot of us, all of us got most of it right, not everything right. I mean, I suppose if we got everything right, we probably wouldn't be human, would we?
Kate, how about... Of course, very lucky.
Yeah.
Kate, how are you going?
I'm doing well. It's so lovely seeing you guys right through this January, you know, extended break that I've been trying to give myself, and I hope my predictions are better than my tech setup sitting here in my daughter's little bungalow. Then there's Adidas sneakers and rubbish everywhere and all of her tech and wires. And anyway, it's fresh from the studios of a little sleep out in sunny Phillip Island.
The connection isn't the greatest for our
listeners. No. Well, the good thing is the way that we use our tech is our connection for our face-to-face isn't so good, but our recording is continuous. So I just have to, you know, pretend or imagine what you're saying when you go still.
Yeah. So for Pete and I just then, Kate was cutting in and out, but the listeners will hear that fully even if we aren't.
Oh, the listeners may not realise we're using Zoom and we've also recording on our phones. So if one tech doesn't work, hopefully the other one still is. But, you know, in the world of COVID, that's what we've got to do. Not everyone's internet's fantastic at home or when they're on holiday. Generally, our internet's best at work because somebody else is paying for really strong internet. But the whole world is no different to what's happening here. So I'm sure our listeners will understand.
And we have Yetis in front of us as well for our
mics. We do. That's not the real abominable snowman. That's actually fancy microphones that we use.
That's right.
Just to make that clear. All right, so let's get stuck into it. So we've got about 9 or 10 different topics that we're looking at. First one is what will the markets do? So what did I say last year? I said every capital city will see increases for 2021 higher than 2020. Well, I got that right, so I think we might stop the show there because we got 100 out of 100. So we'll see you next week.
High five. You can retire. It's like scoring 100 and then, okay, I'll retire.
Dave said, broadly speaking, we expect all the capital cities to perform quite strongly. Very good, Dave. But importantly, why? So I said availability of finance, lending rules were going to be eased and adjustments to responsible lending. Allow people easier borrowing, interest rates are low, consumer confidence was on the rise. Dave said debt serviceability was at a 19-year low, and this is part of the puzzle feeding into the market. Interest repayments as a share of household income is the lowest it's been since March 2002. A lot of savings been happening during COVID. Billions in stimulus money, and there certainly was, in home builder, government incentives, stamp duty concessions, and new building stimulus. And Kate said COVID has had an impact. People have saved a lot of money and have heightened borrowing capacity because of buffers being relaxed, dropped from 7.5% to close to 5.5%.
We're all had that covered.
We have. Yeah. So we did pretty well. So importantly, so that's just the general market, because the next topic we're going to look at capital cities, which we all got horribly wrong. But let's have a look at what are our predictions? So, Dave, what do you think is going to happen this year, 2022?
Pete, what I think will happen in 2022, my prediction is Australia-wide prices will rise by about 7 to 12%. So that's slightly above what most of the economists are predicting. Most of them are sort of sitting, you know, in sort of 5 to 10 or, you know, 3 to 8%. So I think it could surprise above and be double-digit growth again. Now, this is Australia-wide, so obviously different capital cities will outperform others. That's my broad prediction.
All right. I reckon 2022 will see positive capital growth for capital cities and, importantly, regional areas, but it just won't be as good as 2021.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Kate?
Okay, well, I actually think that regional and capital cities will outperform for 2022, and I'm not prepared to say that it will be a performance that's less than 2021. I actually think it's going to be a really heady year. And the disclaimer there is if we get any real shocks, so things that are a bit unforeseen. But I think that we've still got quite a lot of buyer hunger there, and we've still got record low interest rates. Despite the 50 basis points buffer, I've actually got quite an optimistic view. I don't think that our tiny regional cities will necessarily go hard, though. I think there might be a little bit of a pushback with the cities that aren't so supported, not offering easy commutes or enough jobs.
Right. Very good. Okay, so Dave and I think similar, that we'll have a good year but not as good as 2021. And Kate reckons 2022 is going to be a stellar year. So,
actually, I'll just jump in. So ANZ have plus 6%, HSBC plus 5 to 9, CBA plus 7, Louis Christopher SQM Research 0 to 5, Shane Oliver 5. So just like last year, we were ahead of the curve, like in terms of what we expected to happen compared to the banks, and we were proved right last year. Let's see. We're probably a bit more bullish again than the economists, aren't we?
Yeah. All right. So we can pat ourselves on the back for being right there, but my God, did we get the capital cities wrong? So let's have a look at 2021. Dave, Melbourne to finish in the top three, and Perth will be number one. I shouldn't gloat too much, because I also said Perth would be number one or close to number one, because it's been flat for so long and driven by mining. But for the next 12 months, it had a strong chance of doing well. Well, that certainly did not happen. And Kate said, I think Melbourne will bounce back and be in on the top three and potentially be number one. Well, we all got that horribly wrong. However, Kate did say Hobart is a compelling place for working remotely and the lifestyle offered there. Hobart probably has a bit in store, and we should keep an eye on Brisbane. Very good, Kate. And regions. Very good, Kate. And a lot of people have decided to go to the north to migrate. So I think, in summary, Kate got it far more right than we did. So you and I, Dave, Perth, very much a big underperformer, as was Melbourne for all of us. But Kate got Hobart right and the regions and Brisbane. There you go, Kate. Give yourself two pats on the back. You did very well.
Well
done, Kate.
Thanks, Pete. I think the one thing that we can't forget is when we recorded these predictions, we thought Melbourne was out of the storm. We were enjoying our freedoms. We had zero cases. Nobody could see that we were going to have such a horrible and long lockdown that almost perfectly mirrored 2020. So, of course, Melbourne had a hard time as a result of that. There are other factors, but I don't think anyone could have predicted things would be that horrible for our second biggest city.
Yeah, and obviously the key factor with holding Perth back was McGowan keeping the borders locked for the whole year. No one could have predicted or would have predicted that at that point in time either. So, which is why I still have Perth in the top three this year. If the borders stay open once they open them in a few weeks' time.
Okay, so just to give people an overview so we know where everyone's sitting. So last year in 2021, Hobart, number one performer, 28%. Well done, Kate. Brisbane, 27%. Well done again, Kate. Sydney, 25%. Canberra, 25%. Adelaide, 23%. Melbourne, third to last, 15%.
And the regions?
Darwin, the regions did in the 20%.
Yeah,
so I think it was 26.
Over 20%. Yeah.
So they would have been behind Hobart and Brisbane, but above the combined capital cities. 26%.
Darwin 15% and Perth right at the bottom 13%. So the takeaway there is, listeners, if you want to find out which cities you should be investing in or which areas, maybe you need to listen more to Kate than Dave and I.
However, no, don't do that.
I will clarify that, because we've got our predictions for 2022. So, Kate, what do you think for this year?
Okay. If I'm suffering bias, like we discussed a few weeks ago, or if I really genuinely just want to believe it. But my rationale is that Melbourne is going to spring back. And I think we're playing catch up. Now, what really shocked me about my home city is when we had that deluge of stock that was all pushed back and condensed, and we just had crazy numbers and lots of auctions. I mean, I had an auction. There was one week I had an auction Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then three on Saturday. That's insane, not normal. We had that much stock volume, and it was coinciding at a time when we got our freedoms back. People were Christmas shopping, going out, having parties. They were disinterested. They were tired, and there was a lot of stock floating around. And I thought to myself, this is not going to go well. December's going to be a basket case. Anyway, it wasn't. It was minus 0.1, which goes to show that in the face of all of that volume, we had enormous, enormous buyer demand. So my prediction is that buyer demand doesn't just turn off like a tap. They're still there. I know they're there. We've started a really strong January. I'm trying to have a break and the phone doesn't stop. So I think Melbourne will bounce back. I think we'll have less stock than we had late last year. I think our borders will reopen. And while not every international student will flood back to Melbourne, we will get quite a few. And I think that Melbourne will be in the top three. Dare I say it, it might even be in the top two. I think Hobart will continue. The love affair's still there. Vacancy rates are so tight, they're almost zero. There's just no stock down there and everyone wants a slice of the Apple Isle. Brisbane has every reason to keep performing. And I think Canberra's in the mix too, with an asterisk there. Whatever happens in May or whenever the election is that they call, that could really jet Canberra along, or it could dampen things, but I definitely think it's one to watch.
Excellent. Well, that all sounds logical, but as we know, the property market's not always logical. Like, for example, who would have thought we would have had this property boom in the middle of a pandemic? But there you go. Thank you for that, Kate. Dave, what do you reckon is going to happen in 2022 so far as capital cities are concerned?
I think the momentum that Brisbane has already will continue for long enough for it to hold on to top spot. Adelaide also has solid momentum, so I'm fitting it into my top three. And I think Perth, if it keeps its borders open, will actually hit the top three this year as people are able to get over there and inspect more property and buy more property. I've got Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth in the top three. Look, Hobart, you know, continues to have stock shortage. I'm tracking the historical medians of each capital city. I'll share that with our listeners and on our socials soon. And certainly, you know, I was talking about it 12 months ago. I did think Melbourne was going to recover. I still think it's a buying opportunity, but I think it's going to play out over more than 1 year. That's the problem with single year predictions. But Melbourne's, you know, median value has dropped below Canberra's. It's significantly lower than Sydney's as a percentage compared to its historical average. So I think Melbourne will rebound. And, you know, if you're looking beyond 1 year, I still think Melbourne's a very good buy, to Kate's point. I just think there's a bit of probably the stigma of the shutdowns in Melbourne, and also the desire to escape the potential for future COVID lockdowns. I just don't think as many people are going to come to Melbourne, certainly from interstate, in the next 12 months, but I do think it'll rebound in time. I'm also worried about the stigma of Perth with the fact it's had its borders shut and people getting concerned they'll get stuck there, and that's also a concern for people moving to Melbourne. So I've got, just in the next 12 months, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth.
Right, okay. Well, my top four, for what it's worth, Adelaide, Brisbane, Hobart and regional areas. I think regional areas will perform very well once again. So what I can say from that is all three of us agree Brisbane, Dave and I reckon Adelaide, and we also give Hobart a bullet, right? What do they call that on Countdown? It used to be
a bullet, yeah.
Yeah, or rising up the
like
charts.
That. Rising or, yeah.
Well, it can't go up. Can't
I wasn't
go
allowed
too much
to watch
higher.
Countdown.
That's before your time.
No, it was there. I just wasn't. My mum and dad were strict with the telly. Some little piece of fact for you guys that'll make you laugh. My dad got rid of the telly when I was 12. So I was that kid in high school that had no TV. They called me the Amish kid.
Oh, you poor thing.
Well, you still don't watch much telly at all at your house, if any.
Not a lot.
Listeners, what can you take away from that? Well, seriously look at Brisbane, but also do your own research. You know, we're not the fonts of all knowledge here, the three of us.
I like that we didn't really agree on this one. I saw our answers and I thought, yay, we have a genuine tournament here.
Well, I'm leaning towards you. I'm leaning towards you, Kate, with regional areas, and that's what we're talking about next, because I've certainly seen the COVID exodus, not just from big capital cities to small capital cities, but also from cities to the country. So how about, Kate, because you're our regional queen here, how about if we start with you? What did you reckon was going to happen to regions last year? What was your prediction?
Yeah, I said a continued level of performance out of our regions, maybe not at the same rate. So I was wrong there because the regions outperformed almost across the board. I did say we'll see a stark contrast between houses and townhouses versus apartments. That one's a hard one, and the reason why it's hard to measure is our data doesn't determine whether a townhouse or an apartment is in the unit data. It's either a house or a unit. Now, if by the definition of the word unit I've, you know, said that houses and apartments will have a stark contrast, I was actually very wrong. And I mentioned this a few weeks ago when I pointed out the data and just really circled in on the regional house performance versus units. Units were in the 20s as well. Like, it was a really, really strong piece of data. And that was when we were scratching our heads, and I think I threw it out there, maybe it's a high rise in Coolangatta, but that doesn't make sense. You know, the data is broad and you'd need a hell of a lot of sales to skew that. And it was a really interesting one. It means that the escape to the regions was into anything that they could get their hands on, not just houses. So it wasn't about value. It was about escapism. I also said top quartile property price growth will slow down in the regions as the appeal of capital cities shines bright again. And the bottom quartile will start to perform and speed up because of a return of investors. People love bottom quartile properties in regional markets when they're looking for strong cash flows. Strong rental returns and capital growth in regions will entice investors. Well, I was half wrong and half right there. The bottom quartile has gone hard, but the top quartile hasn't come off. It's continued to shine bright. And certainly in my home state, we didn't anticipate Melbourne having another monster lockdown. And so that did see a continued flee away from the city. And people did spend big and did target beautiful, large regional homes. And I just look at the two regions that I'm very familiar with, Ballarat and Geelong. Their top quartile markets have gone really strong, and there are some really stunning properties. And if you read the local papers like the Geelong Advertiser or whatever, they have price records in the premium suburbs all the time as articles. It's almost like they come out every Saturday.
Dave, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, my prediction for 2021 in this space was capital cities will start to close the gap on regionals, which happened. They didn't surpass them, though. People will come back to capital cities once normality resumes and to make up on time lost during lockdowns. Obviously, we had more lockdowns than we're all expecting, which is probably somewhat naive of us, likely to be in line with when vaccines are available, what I built that premise on. So obviously the vaccine rollout was a story of the year and was quite slow, and, you know, we only got there towards the end of the year. Capital cities may start to outperform the regions again. So they didn't quite get there. Some capital cities did. Brisbane did. I think it was Hobart, was it, that outperformed the overall regionals?
Just to recap, we got Hobart at 28%, Brisbane at 27%, regions at 26%, Sydney did 25%, Canberra did 25%, Adelaide 23%. So, those were in the mid to high 20s. So the regional areas historically perform very, very well. And what do we think is going to happen for this year? Well, I'll go first. I reckon regions will outperform capital cities again, which will be 3 years in a row, which is probably unheard of. But again, I am seeing this COVID-19 exodus. I'm reading about it, but I'm also hearing about it and seeing it. But they're not just going to any country town. They have to be, you know, within reasonable driving distance of the nearest capital city, some lifestyle attributes, you know, like near the coast or up in the hills. But I reckon that's what's going to happen. What do you think is going to happen, Dave, this year?
Look, I said fairly even, so I thought the gap could continue to close. But, look, I'm not saying that with any confidence because, you know, between the exodus but also the well-off in the capital cities buying holiday getaways in the regions, that double sort of whammy of demand, it's definitely still there. People, certainly, you know, people in Melbourne, friends, that desire to have a getaway is really strong.
Right. Kate, what do you reckon?
Well, I've got a lot of thoughts on this one. First and foremost, the ratio between houses and units. We saw that it wasn't a very severe ratio in the regions, but it was in the metro. I think metro will close a little bit. We'll see units come back when people do return to the city and need the city. But in terms of regional growth, I think growth will continue, but in the really significant regional cities, not in the tiny ones. And I'm prepared to say populations of less than 20,000 for a regional town, I'm nervous about that, particularly if it's more than 90 minutes away from a capital city or a main hub. And I also think that the rate of holiday house take up will slow down as our international borders reopen, because we saw a lot of people allocate their travel money to holiday houses. So I do think that the regions will continue to perform for affordability and for lifestyle, but not necessarily for escaping or for substituting for a holiday.
Okay. So last year saw a big change in who was buying. So we've had the tail end of home builder. So lots of first-time buyers in particular, not many investors. So we thought we'd talk about what we reckon would happen to investor numbers in 2021. And I said with home builder being phased out by March, we'll see the end of first-time buyers, especially new homes, which leaves the gate open for investors, correct? Dave said we'll see investors bully their way back in and investor numbers to increase in 2021. And the appeal of neutral and positive gearing will spur investor activity. Well done, Dave. That's a big tick there. And Kate said, with the cost of doing business being reduced, investors will come back into the market. Returns and low interest rates, this will be the year of the returning investor. Well done, Kate and Dave and Pete. We got it all right there. But what do we think is going to happen to investors?
We nailed that.
Unlike capital cities. So what
virtual
do you reckon?
High five.
Let's what do you reckon is going to happen?
Stop dwelling on the capital city mistake. Everything else has been pretty good.
We would expect that we've got a good grip on investor activity. You know, that is our thing. That's what the three of us absolutely have in common. We know what investors are up to.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
All right, so Kate, what do you reckon will happen to investors this year?
I predict investor numbers will increase unless our regulator toys around with credit policy and restricts it again. But I think they know that that's a dangerous thing to do in the face of really tight vacancy rates.
That's a good point you raise, and we've talked about that in recent shows. Yeah. Dave, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, they'll continue to increase. They went from new loan commitments at October 2020, 12 months ago, 23%, and then October 2021, which is the latest we've got, was 33%. So that's a significant jump over the last 12 months, as we predicted. I think they'll continue going up, but I do think the pressure will build on policymakers. And I think there'll be some kind of policy intervention during the year to slow down, whether it's just APRA broadly making it harder to borrow or something specifically targeted at investors. I think there'll be some kind of intervention before the end of the year.
Yeah, and actually, I said similar. Sorry, Kate, you were going to say?
I think that we might see some policies around enticing investors to be a part of something that's offering affordable housing. I think that jungle drum will get a lot louder.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I said last year that, this year I'm saying, assuming APRA doesn't place restrictions on investment, investor numbers will continue to increase, but not at the same rate as 2021. So we're all on the same page, maybe different parts of that page, but all on the same page. But we're all talking about policymakers and APRA. Last year, Dave said, I think middle of 2021, noise in the media about price affordability, the jungle drums will keep beating and APRA will step in late 2021 or early 2022. And Kate said at some stage in late 2021 or early 2022, we'll start to hear people campaigning for easier conditions for first-time buyers. So, Dave, the benchmark increased last year, didn't it? So even though the cash rate didn't increase, So who bought that on, Dave? Was it APRA? APRA.
Yeah.
APRA. Okay.
So I pretty much nailed that one, Pete.
It was APRA.
Yeah, it was. That's pretty much what actually happened.
I did get that one wrong because we haven't had strong campaigns for first home buyers, and the reason for that is we've continued some incentives for them. We've helped with all kinds of things at a federal and state level, and first home buyers are still active.
Okay. Yeah. So Dave, I can see there, has got a huge smile on his face. So what do you reckon? Do
no,
you
I
think-
didn't. I just needed to mention it given the stuff up on the Capital City prediction.
On Perth and Perth and Melbourne,
I was waiting for the whiteboard and the texter marks, you know, like another one to Dave.
Yeah, I was waiting for Pete to give me a tick. He said nothing.
Well, interestingly, Kate, for this year, Kate and I think the same, but Dave, what do you reckon is going to happen with APRA this year?
So you two think nothing will happen. I do think something will happen, especially if rates stay at the same level all year. So I think either APRA will make another move to restrict lending to some degree, or there'll be new government policy designed to either increase supply or assist first-time buyers or slash restrict investors. I think something's going to happen, just like it did last year. You know, the media is too powerful nowadays.
Especially leading up to an election, yeah.
Yeah, and there'll be promises made leading into the election. The policies that come out will be dependent on which party wins the election. I think something will happen.
You don't think that homelessness and rising rents is going to be a more burning issue?
Homelessness is a problem, absolutely. It doesn't get the level of media attention that rising property prices do, and it doesn't get the level of media attention that the struggle of first-time buyers does. As investors are buying more properties, it's going to ease rental costs to some degree, but it's then going to put pressure on first-time buyers, and I just think that there'll be policy intervention there. Now, it might be making it easier for major organisations to do builds to rent, but I do think there'll be policy intervention. I think if rates stay the same all year, the market's going to keep moving and the jungle drums will keep beating and APRA will step in, or there'll be a policy intervention.
I'm only speaking for myself here, but if you wanted to try and work out who should I be listening to, Peter or Dave, when it comes to APRA, you should be listening to Dave, because Dave is the finance expert on the show. I'm actually hoping APRA won't do anything. I'm not exactly sure if they're going to do anything. Mine's just hope. But Dave is in the finance arena all day, every day. He'd have a much better idea. All right, developers.
Well, I really try not to barrack for the property market. So.
All right, developers and builders. So, geez, we had a huge year last year. I said developers and builders would be flat out. So I got it right there. Dave said there would be a shift to larger size apartments and townhouses and less one-bedroom apartments. Correct. Well done, Dave. Kate predicted penthouses and three-bedroom apartments to recover and exhibit growth because they're rare. People want the extra bedroom. Definitely. That's certainly what's been happening in COVID, and people possibly using that extra bedroom as their study. Kate also predicted there'd be a builder shortage. Yeah, and I certainly agree. So I think we pretty much nailed that one for last year. What do we think is going to happen this year? I think 2022 will continue to be a tough time to find a tradie or a builder, and some builders will go under because of cash flow issues. And that's been brought on not necessarily by poor management from the builder's perspective, but the supply. You know, if your bricks have been held up for months or your timber's been held up for months, you can't move on with the work. If you can't move on with the work, you don't get progress payments. If you're not going to get progress payments, cash flow is the blood that flows through the business veins. If you're not going to get that, unfortunately, things are not going to go well. Kate, what do you think is going to happen with building and developing in 2022?
I absolutely echo your sentiment, Pete. And I think the other element to that is we've got a lot of large builders that said that they honoured fixed price contracts. You know, that was a real selling proposition before they thought that the cost of materials was going to triple. So we'll see a lot of builders in distress for that very reason too, because they either honour the contract or they face losses because they've got, you know, they're rescinding and they'll have all kinds of things that they have to rebate. So I am worried that we'll see a few go under and that will exacerbate the builder shortage issue. And we have so many exciting infrastructure projects going on around our country in regions and capital cities. And I know from personal experience, I've got a stepson who's in the industry. He's switched over to jump onto an infrastructure project, and a lot of his buddies have too. And it happens a lot. I see clients doing it. So we're seeing builders opting out of the home building and extending market and getting into, you know, like tunnel digging and roadworks and rail projects. So I think this is going to be a continued issue that will be a bit of a hallmark of 2022. And it will also see a lot of people choosing to sell and buy as opposed to renovate and extend. So that will change our trading conditions a bit too.
Dave, what do you think? Building and developing for 2022?
Look, you know, I think it will continue. Builders are going to remain very expensive due to the overhang of the home builder. There's still probably more than half of those properties that access that are still being built or to be built. I think, which will come to as one of the risks for this year, I think supply chains aren't going to untangle as easily as many think they will. I think that's going to lag and carry on, and obviously that's going to impact this specific area industry as well.
Right. Yeah, agreed. Okay. So moving on to interest rates, and luckily we have Dave, our finance expert, on the show. So Dave predicted last year interest rates continue to stay low and fixed rates will increase. Dave, two big ticks for you, mate.
Dave
very,
nailed it.
Very good. Fantastic. All right. Well, but what are our predictions for this year? I'll give you mine. And I just want to point out something. I reckon the cash rate will remain the same. I'm not saying anything about interest rates because it's the banks that determine what happens to interest rates. But I don't reckon the RBA will increase the cash rate in 2022. What do you reckon, Dave?
Yeah, interest rates will remain the same. There could be a 0.25% rise at the end of the year, but my prediction would be they would stay the same. I predict the RBA will announce at their first meeting this year that the quantitative easing, the bond buying, which is also known as cash printing, will cease. They'll announce that at their first meeting. So that's what I expect to happen. And fixed rates will continue to increase further. I also predict the US will have multiple rate rises this year, maybe three or more. And that's going to put pressure on rate increases on countries like Australia.
And the Australian dollar, won't it? If there's a big discrepancy between interest rates here in the US,
yeah,
it'll put pressure on the Aussie dollar.
Yeah, and look, if you look at the three-year bond yield, that's increased by close to 1% over the last 12 months. Fixed rates, we've talked about how much they've gone up in the last 6 months.
And Kate, what's your prediction for interest rates for 2022?
I think we'll have no change in 2022 unless US inflation becomes a consistent concern, and it may well do. I agree with Dave, fixed rates will increase as a result of our move on buying bonds. I also think that if we have an increase, 0.25 is a really strong increase when we look at the fact that we're at 0.1 as a cash rate. You know, if we apply to 0.25, that would be tripling the current rate. So I think if we do see any increases, they'll be really, really tiny. But my prediction is nothing for 2022 unless there's enormous shakeup in the US.
Right. Okay. There you have it, folks, our predictions for interest rates. So we've got about five more minutes and we've still got two or three points to cover off. Next one is rents and vacancy rates. Kate predicted last year that tenants to return, vacancy rates to tighten, and they certainly did. We're seeing some record low vacancy rates, Hobart 0.3%, Adelaide 0.5%. Keeping in mind that the equilibrium is around 2%, most of our capital cities are well below that. So predictions for 2022, Kate, seeing you got it so right for last year, what do you reckon? You can go first. What do you reckon is going to happen this year?
Higher rents and tighter vacancies absolutely everywhere. And I feel Melbourne's bounce back will shock all of us.
Okay, very good. I reckon rents will continue to increase and vacancy rates to stay extremely low as international students come in 2022 and the international borders open, because all of these people need somewhere to live. Already vacancy rates are tight and we're just going to make them tighter. Dave, what do you think?
I think rents increasing but at a more stable pace, but still above average. increasing investor purchases will put downward pressure on this gradually over the year, as will policy intervention. But as you said, the return of international migration overseas students to more historical numbers will offset this to some degree. And that's where I think the balance will sit, above average, but coming off the high levels we've seen of the last 12 months. Vacancy rates remain very low, which will also be partly due to the lag time of new properties being finished, due to the slowdown of the beginning of new projects in 2020.
Right. Okay. So sales volumes, and we had a record year last year. We haven't seen as many properties sold in 2021 that we've seen for many, many years. I predicted that there would be an increase in the number of sales. Did not predict a record, but I did predict an increase. Kate, what did you say about sales volumes last year?
I said that we'd see an increase in metro when the vendors say that the selling conditions are good, because, you know, we've come through two downturns and market wobbles in 19 and 2020, and we saw exactly that. Enter the greedy vendor.
Yep. Okay. So predictions for 2022, I reckon sales volumes will remain high, but it won't be a record year like last year. Dave, what do you reckon?
Pretty similar. Reduce but stay above the average sales volumes for the last sort of 3 to 5 years. But last year was actually the highest on record. So, you know, I don't think that's going to happen again this year.
Kate, what do you think?
I think that we'll see some really good volumes, but not necessarily high sales volumes. So the difference between listing and sales, the reason I say this is not every vendor will meet the market. We're going to see a lot of vendors popping themselves on the market to try it on, but not everyone will make a decision to sell, especially if they don't have to. But what I do think when we segment the market is some of the smaller properties, townhouses, anything that an upgrader is selling, we'll see a fair few of those, because a lot of people are making the decision to sell and buy as opposed to increase the footprint of their dwelling because of the builder shortage.
Right. Okay, very good. And our last topic that we're looking at, looking backwards at and also looking forwards to, is the risks which could impact the market. So last year, Kate, what did you reckon the risks were in the market?
Well, the opportunity to buy at a reduced rate when JobKeeper comes off, you know, that pales in comparison to the driving forces. So there could be some fallout from that. I was absolutely right. So a lot of people held back thinking they'd buy a bargain when JobKeeper came off, and the market didn't come off. I'm of the view that vendors who have been in distress will have made a sensible decision before that time, and they'll have taken measures to clear their debt or downgrade their property.
Okay. And Dave, what did you say for last year?
Well, I'm commenting on JobKeeper. I said obviously that coming off was a risk, but I said there may be another level of support for small businesses. And I don't know if people can remember the argy-bargy with when lockdown started to happen again and JobKeeper had ended, and then the states were putting pressure on the federal government to provide some sort of support, and of course they ended up doing it, but you had to be shut down for a week or 2 weeks, and there was then the debate whether New South Wales given more than Victoria. So that happened. I also spoke about geopolitical risks and also the risk of iron ore price coming away. Obviously that didn't impact our property market, although that the iron ore price did drop significantly.
Okay. And I talked about vaccinations, the risk that vaccinations are not the panacea that people are expecting. Vaccinations seem to have gone quite well so far as protection is concerned. I know, you know, governments and the health department would like to see us vaccinate at a much more rapid rate, but that didn't seem to be a problem. That was not a risk to the market or the economy last year. What do we see as risks for this year? I'll kick that off. I reckon the tightening of lending. If there is less availability of money, then the property market will slow. Kate, what do you reckon?
I've got six things. I'll read them all out. Firstly, any silly stuff our politicians dream up to win votes. You know, if they invent a silly policy that rattles investor sentiment, that could have a direct impact. APRA tinkering with credit, that's always a risk. The US hiking up interest rates, we've always said it before, if they've got a cold, we sneeze, or vice versa. Builders with fixed price contracts going into receivership. If we see some large ones, that will have an effect. Another nastier COVID strain than Delta. Fingers crossed. But
good point.
You know, we were bullish last year and we didn't think about another massive lockdown, and it really hit, you know, three cities in particular. Supply chain shocks with essentials and panic buying.
Dave, what do you think? What's your prediction for what risks we might encounter in 2022?
Yeah, similar to Kate, I had quite a few similar to her and quite a few potential risks too. So one is inflation becoming endemic. So at least continuing for the first 6 months of the year in the US. I mean, it's already at the highest rate of 40 years, which is a real concern. I've said, similar to Kate, new COVID strains and COVID still not becoming something that we can live with easily and freely across the year. So, you know, we're not there yet. Supply chains not freeing up as easily as some believe they will, which I don't think they're going to free up as easily as people think they will. So I think that feeds into the inflation concern. US increasing rates multiple times, which I think will happen. So then share markets falling in the US and Oz off the back of multiple interest rate rises in the US, which then can impact other markets like a property market. Australia increasing rates early. Russia invading Ukraine.
Boom. That's scary.
APRA stepping in again, or government placing restrictions on investors, which I think is going to happen at some stage. But that's why I've predicted 7 to 12% and not, you know, close to 20% again, like Kate's predicted. Perth and Melbourne are on the nose due to government's harsh approach to lockdown and closed borders, causing trust issues for interstate migration and people living in the cities and choosing to leave. And the property market actually moving into negative territory towards the end of the year. So they're risks. And, you know, we've got to keep our eyes open. Overall, obviously predicted 7 to 12%. But I do think there's some significant risks. I don't know if anyone's read today's financial review too. There's just another one that's come up, which Xi Jinping has basically asked America and first world countries not to raise their interest rates. And they've just reduced their interest rates. And in essence, their financial system is at great risk. And it, you know, it's the potential to stave off financial contagion from the debt-heavy property sector.
So Evergreen, that's caused by Evergreen.
Well, Evergrande and then other developers over there. So like the geopolitical tensions of China wanting rates to be reduced and then they've lent a lot of money to third world nations who haven't got as many people vaccinated. China's vaccination is not working as well. Sinopharm, it's not as effective. So they're locking down madly still. So their economy is not as strong. Yeah, but that's pretty unheard of, asking the US and others not to raise rates. The US, I think, will have to with inflation where it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's risks. There's always risks.
Risks everywhere.
But you've got to invest because over the long run, you make more money from investing. And you
That's
can
right.
always find reasons not to invest if you look hard enough.
If you're at the extreme of the risk-averse continuum, then you should just leave your money in the bank and earn 0.0001% interest. Yes.
Yeah.
There is some risks if you want return. Well, look, thank you very much, Kate. Thank you, Dave. I think it's great that, you know, we're willing to go back and have a look at our forecasts and talk about where we went wrong and why we went wrong. Look, we can get 100 out of 100. I probably would give ourselves a high distinction, which is at least 85% or more. Kate probably got a better high distinction than you and I, Dave, but we still got a high distinction. So well done for 2021. Let's see what happens to 2022. But please don't go away, listeners, as we have our gold nuggets from Kate and Dave.
I think, Pete, you're dwelling on that one capital city thing a bit too much. I reckon.
Imagine if you put all your money into Perth instead of Sydney. Like, the difference is huge. And if you did it over the 2 year period, the difference is probably.
Well, Kate predicted Melbourne. It was only 2% above Perth. We'll measure it in 20 years' time.
I haven't told you to this, but I'm going. When I next pick my topic, it'll be the property market, the past, the present, and the future. So I'm going to do some serious research and analysis about long-term growth. You know, it's okay to say, you know, we stuffed up over 1 year, but who buys and sells a property in a year? People hold it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and then we'll see.
Yeah.
Then we'll see.
Yeah. And I think it's important for us to actually say that. So I'm just going to say this again, if you two want to say anything. But the important thing is that, you know, these are only 12-month increments, and it's the long-term results that matter.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Very true. All right. So, Kate and Dave, you got your gold nuggets ready?
Yeah.
Kate was going to say something, but because of the cutting in and out, it didn't work.
Just sitting here watching you downgrade my HD. What a mongrel thing to do.
Let's moderate that HD.
It's not downgrading yours. I was upgrading mine.
Since we recorded our predictions episode in early January, Mark McGowan has once again decided to keep Western Australia's borders closed, and also the Australian share market has dropped to its lowest level in 8 months. Just yesterday, on concern that rising inflation will lead to the US Fed Reserve and the RBA to raise rates and remove the extraordinary stimulus that has been boosting growth stocks in particular. This does align with some of the risks and predictions that we had spoken about, but it is still only early days in 2022.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
Well, my gold nugget is that you can get lots of different people that pride themselves on being professionals in this space, or, you know, have a really strong opinion. And the point is, we don't have a crystal ball that works with a good warranty. And we wanted to bring this to light, to be really honest about it. It's showcased some of the things that each of us as individuals are strong at. It's also showcased that we're happy to disagree. But I think the most important thing that any listener can glean from this is, if someone's saying something that's bullish or surprising or outlandish, they've definitely got to have reasons for saying that. And I think it's important that we talk through our rationale, because we can see then, retrospectively, where we got it wrong, where our assumptions were wrong. You know, the case in point here, that there are lots of things that we got wrong as well. And one of the critical things that all three of us didn't envisage was the Delta strain giving us continued lockdowns in 2021. We looked back at 2020 and said, oh, that was the terrible COVID year. The reality is, we didn't gear ourselves up to prepare for it lasting. And I think that, you know, we did get quite a few things right, but the point is, no one has all of the answers, and you've got to be prepared to ask someone why.
Correct. It's not just what you think, it's why you think that. Very good, yep. Kate. Dave, what's your gold nugget for today's episode?
Irrespective of whether people invested in the capital city or the regions, when you add up the capital growth plus the yield, anyone's return on the average return of each capital city and region was between 17% and 30% on the year. So whichever capital city or region. And one thing we're all quite bullish on, and probably even saying privately, I know I was, that this year could go as high as 20%. So we're all bullish on last year being a really strong year, and it was. And picking capital cities is fun, but it's about long-term investing.
Yeah.
And property isn't an asset class that is friendly to short-term trades. So, you know, it's fun to pick what's going to outperform in the short term, and obviously that can potentially make a difference if that gap you've gained in the first 12 months is maintained over the long term, 10, 20, 30 years. But the reality is, it probably won't be. So don't get overly caught up in the city that you select, and don't get too worried if it slightly outperforms or underperforms in the next 12 months.
It's the long term you need to worry about. Correct. Well, thank you very much for that, Kate and Dave. Very, very insightful episode as to what happened last year and what we think is going to happen this year. Only time will tell who's right, and we certainly watch the property market with interest over 2022. So thanks for your time, Kate. Thanks, Dave, and look forward to catching up next week.
Wonderful. That was lots of fun.
That was good fun. Thanks, guys. See ya.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the themes discussed, then you can listen to episode 4, How to Develop Your Own Property Plan, Start with the End in Mind. Episode 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now is Always the Best Time to Buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan. Episode 19, Time in the Market versus Timing the Market. Episode 31, Get Rich Quick Schemes, number one of the top seven critical mistakes people make. And episode 52, Dissecting 10 Years of CoreLogic Data, Capital Cities and Regional Areas.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.